Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with a Kia EV6. Inspire your senses. The fully electric EV6. Kia. Movement that inspires.
1850 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon. You are very welcome to Liveline. Katie Hannan in today for Joe. We've been getting calls and messages in on about the 11811 phone lines. So those are those directory inquiry lines. A lot of people still actually think that they are free. They are, I can tell you, far from free. Hugely exorbitant costs go along with calling those numbers. Just an example of one of the messages we've had in here. I have a disabled brother. This man, he says he lives on his own. He used to use 11811 to phone people. So he'd, you know, call up to get a number and they'd get asked to be put through. He was saying that calls regularly cost 50 and 60 euro. And he had asked to have it disabled, but that didn't work. And he eventually had to figure out a way to block those calls himself to stop these bills coming into his brother. And you might think, how could you rack up a call of 50 or 60 euro? Well, not that difficult to do it when you look at the costs. From last September, that's the last time those prices were fixed. If you're calling 11811, that's the air, on a fixed landline call, you'll get charged 3.99. This is since last September, 3.99 to get put through. And then you are charged per second after that. To the degree that if you're on for 1 minute, that'll be another 3.99. Thanks very much. So that's 8 euro for 1 minute on one of those calls. As you can see, it wouldn't be long getting up to the 50 euro there if you were having a bit of a chat with anyone. So let us know if you have come across this or been caught by this. And we'll be getting back to that a little later in the programme. But now I want to go to Tom. Tom, good afternoon to you.
Hello, how are you?
Tom, you have an issue with something that I think a lot of people are very welcoming of, which is these terraces of outdoor dining tables and chairs that have become part of our streetscape now since we've had to deal with COVID regulations.
Yes.
Yeah. What's your problem?
Well, the problem is that I think Dr. Houlihan has given the go-ahead now to get back to normality. And it's time to take them back in off the streets and give us back our parking, our space. The streets were not put there for the personal convenience of the restaurant. They were put there for everybody. And another thing is, if you are living in Ballsbridge and you're living quite close to a restaurant, they leave at 4 o'clock in the evening. They leave the mess behind them and you have to put up with it. They're gone home.
But do restaurants not look after that stuff themselves, like look after the tidying up and the cleaning up?
Well, I think so, but very few of them do. The very upmarket restaurants probably do, but most of them don't. And when you come down in the morning, there you have to walk through tables and chairs to get to where you want to. I know it was inevitable during the lockdown, but the point I want to make is that when all this is all over, that those people just gather up and take their chairs back in. I believe quite a lot of them are trying to blackmail the government at the moment into making this a long-term scheme.
Okay, that's a very strong term now, blackmail. That's actually a criminal term, I think. You're saying they're trying to...
As an economist, I wouldn't put it that way. If somebody comes to me and says, look, if you don't increase my wages, I will leave at the end of the month. You can put that in any context, but what I'm saying is the government should take into account that the streets belong to everybody, and if they're being put under pressure by the restaurants or the commercial people or whatever they may call themselves, that this should not be the case. When they rent their shops, they pay for the lease and nothing else, not the footpaths and not the roads.
Have you been to, because there was a big backlash there last week when it was announced that the pedestrianisation of Capel Street in Dublin, just on the north side of the river, that was going to be reversed and that we were going to go back to normal in just now, I think it was about to happen. And there was such a backlash that they had to postpone that and that they're keeping that pedestrianisation element and the cafe culture that came with it is in place until at least the end of the month. So it does have its fans.
Sorry, I didn't get that.
I said it does have its fans, the fan. There is a lot of people out there who are very happy with this.
Absolutely. If you're living in the area, you're going to be unhappy. Like, I mean, there are four restaurants for everyone that's needed. Where I live in Ballsbridge, 3 years ago, there was one restaurant. Now there's four. They opened up all over the place. Anybody that could cook an egg opened up a restaurant. And everywhere you go, you have those tables. If you go out to Docky, I don't live out there, but you can't get down the streets at all without walking down the road. But that's fine for the moment, so long as it goes back to normal when this lockdown is over. Now, as I say, Mr. Houlihan has given the go-ahead for the opening up of major events like Electric Picnic and all those. So obviously, it's they've got the green light to go ahead and serve inside at the moment if you have got your vaccinations. But the point I want to make is, in the long term, it shouldn't be allowed to continue.
But, I mean, have you been abroad, Tom, and seen
how
this works in other cities?
I live in the Costa del Sol most of the year, yeah.
Oh, well, then sure, you're very familiar with street furniture and people sitting outside cafes and restaurants having their meal.
Very little. They're on the promenade, but not on the main streets, and the streets are very much wider than Dublin. There's very little happening outside in Lestepona, for instance. They're very wide streets, and they sit out along the beach, and that I do have your point there, but the fact is that they've taken away our parking and a lot of the facilities.
Is it the parking or the pavement space that you're more concerned about, Tom?
Both.
Right.
Both. I'm only one person, but I'm speaking for an awful lot of people. And the major problem is with the street dining, they leave an awful mess behind them and they don't clean up.
Well, let me bring in, I've got Gina Murphy, people will know Gina from Hugo's restaurant there on Merrion Row. And of course, Merrion Row has been transformed completely.
Well, I was going to mention Merrion Row, absolutely. I was going to mention
Merrion
Row.
What were you going
to
say about Merrion Row?
Well, you can't drive down it anymore. You can drive down, but you can't come back up. So they've taken that over completely.
And you would not be supportive of that.
I don't think it's reasonable whatsoever. No, I don't think it's reasonable at all.
Gina, you've taken over the street, and it's not reasonable.
Well, first of all, hi Katie, hi Tom.
Hi Gina.
First of all, just to put something to rest, you can still drive down Merrion Row. It was never a two-way street. It was only ever one way, and you can still drive down it.
So what they've just narrowed, they've taken one of the lanes out of it, isn't it?
Yes, yeah, and what they've done is done footpath build-outs on both sides of the street because it really is a hospitality street. It's 110 yards long or metres long, and we have hospitality businesses wall-to-wall all the way down the street. So the council very kindly built out footpaths build-outs for us, and all our furniture is on the footpath build-outs. So there's been no hindrance to the original footpaths. In fact, they've been kept completely clear. And we entered into a street agreement that the whole place would be tidied up every single night. We're very strict on it. We put together a program where we all have the same furniture, so it's very uniform and clear and clean looking. We've all the same tables, all the same chairs, and every operator has agreed to... We sweep the entire street, not just the build-outs. We sweep from the Huguenot Cemetery right down to the traffic lights every single night.
Who pays for that, Gina?
We do. We do it ourselves. I sweep the street.
Yeah, Tom.
Yes.
Respond to that there. Gina...
Respond to it. When you've taken over the streets, do you pay any kind of rent to the department? Or how do you compensate?
Not at the moment, Tom, but I tell you what we do have is our capacity within our businesses, even though we're open indoors, we're at 50% capacity. So the council, in my eyes, have been phenomenal in supporting the businesses that do pay rates. And I have no problem paying rates when we're allowed to get up and trading normally. And I think everybody would be of that opinion. But we weren't allowed trade indoors until very, very recently, and we're only at 50% capacity with social distancing. So we still can't operate our businesses properly. And these footpath build-outs are lifelines for businesses. And that has to be acknowledged. There's no parking on Merrion Row, Tom. right? So nobody was put out by not having parking. There's still access to Merrion Row when you're coming from Kildare Street, and just the traffic that was coming from Stephen's Green was rerouted onto Hume Street and Ely Place. But all the businesses on that street have been able to trade because of the footpath build-outs. And there were hundreds of jobs on the line for this.
That's one point.
Can I ask you, Gina, where is this going for you? Have you been told that this can... Because I was saying there that there's been that issue about the reversal of some of the pedestrianisation on Capel Street. Mm-hmm. What's happening in Merrion Row?
Well, we were given this as a temporary... facility, but with the agreement that we would all be able to monitor what was going on, how it was being received and how everything moved around the city with it. We'll probably be going back to public consultation again in a couple of months' time, but it is our wish as the street and all the operators and offices that this would become a permanent fixture. I mean, there's really no need for traffic to be going down our street.
Sorry, could I step in there? That's what we're worried about. We don't want a permanent fixture. Just to allow you to do it, while this when this problem is over, you go back to normal.
Yeah, but Tom, I'm the person on the street, and I'm telling you now, the wish of the people on the street is that...
The wish of the people who paid £4 million for the house beside you will not appreciate that very much.
There's no residents on my street, Tom.
There is residents on Pembroke Road that lead right up to Merrion Row.
No, Pembroke Road does not lead to Merrion Row. Pembroke Road leads to Bagot Street, which is about a half a mile away from Merrion Row. We have no residents on Merrion Row.
Bagot Street leads on to, like I was a developer in Dublin, that main road that comes down from the bridge that reaches Merrion Row, that's what we call Bagot Street.
Yeah, well... Merrion Row connects to Bagot Street. Bagot Street is an extremely long street, which then ends up, like a 10-minute walk away, ends up on Pembroke Road. Merrion Row is nowhere near Pembroke Road.
Okay, I don't want to confuse people who maybe are not familiar with this particular part of the city. but maybe, Tom, tell us, how far do you, when you step out your front door in Ballsbridge, how far do you have to walk before you are, you know, confronted by... cafe tables.
When I come down, I'm not mentioning the restaurants. I'm confronted by the two biggest restaurants in Dublin and two other takeaways. So, well, they weren't takeaway, they're breakfast places. There's usually a good few people outside. Well, they're using the common areas in our block at the moment. But that's one thing, that's fair enough. But everywhere you go, there seems to be an awful lot of people on the street. My main concern is why I brought about this issue was that it should go back to normal. There's no other way it should remain.
Well,
that's only my opinion.
Absolutely. But I mean, and Gina's obviously coming at it from a completely opposite position. But Gina, have you been given some comfort, because obviously you've had a lot of engagement with the council, with the corporation. Have they given you an indication of, that they believe this is working well and we might be prepared to consider a permanent?
Yes, they have. So, but I mean, Katie and Tom, I mean, again, I'm not here to argue with anybody, but it's just to explain what's happening with where I am. I mean, obviously, every different area is different, and it's up to the operators to run good establishments. And Tom, what I would suggest to you is that perhaps you go and talk to these operators and let them know that you're unhappy with how they've left the place.
That was the objective of this conversation.
Yeah, but you're not dealing with them directly. That is
Bagot Street that leads up to Merrion Row. It comes up from Tesco.
Yeah. But finish what I was going to say here? So, like, if you went to the operators themselves and said that you were unhappy, I'm sure that they would take everything on board. Going back to where we are on Merrion Row, Katie, we are in constant talks with the council, and yes, we are progressing this and taking it forward. And I have to say, what it's done for Merrion Row, it has changed the pace of the city. It is absolutely
Tom,
why do you have to keep talking across me?
I'm so sorry. Go ahead. I'll start you talking and I'll talk.
Okay. So It has changed the pace of the city. People stroll down Merrion Row now. And one of the things that we were working at as businesses was understanding what Merrion Row is to the city. And it is a pedestrian link that links all the cultural institutions. So you've got the National Gallery, the National Museum, the Concert Hall, the RHA, government buildings. And we analysed all our customers, and like most of them are walking between the institutions. And so we've actually been in touch now with all the institutions for them to bring the culture to the street. And this is what we're working at, is to create a cultural hub within the city. So it's more than just outdoor dining, Tom. We're trying to create an amenity for the city, not just tourists, but for the locals alike. And I have to say the response has been phenomenal and overwhelmingly in our support.
Can I just ask you, Gina, because I have been down there briefly, but I'm trying to recall what exactly is the setup. Do you have awnings over all those tables, or how will you manage, you know, as we come out of the summer months now? And can this possibly work in a Dublin winter?
Well, currently we all have parasols, but they are being replaced. So with winterization scheme through Fáilte Ireland and Dublin City Council.
So you are, that's it then for Tom. I mean, you are going to be out there in the winter winter months. Tom's fears, if I call them that way, may be realised in terms of
this. Well, I mean, it's just Merrion Row where we're doing the winterisation. I'm not saying I can't speak for what's happening in Balls Bridge down where Tom is, but, you know, yes, this is what we're working for. And I have to say, the response has been phenomenal, overwhelmingly in our support, and people are delighted with it. I mean, even today, the terrace is full, but like that, we haven't... The footpaths are still clear. There's still access down there for cars. Our long-term aim, obviously, would be to pedestrianise the full street. But, I mean, Tom...
That's the point. You would like to pedestrianise the whole of Dublin.
That's not true, Tom. Please don't put words into my mouth.
You've been talking there for 2 hours, and I'm telling you, that's what
you're a hard egg to crack, I tell you.
Tom... would you accept that, you know, okay, it's not your, you know, it's not your cup of tea, and you obviously resent...
it's not my cup of tea.
But it's hugely popular with a lot of people, Tom.
Sorry. Go ahead.
I'm saying it is hugely popular with a lot of people.
It's not popular with the people who live there. No way is it popular. Do you want to pedestrianise the whole of Dublin? It's probably on the cards in the future with pollution and everything else. They want to get the cars out of the city, we know that.
Okay, listen, can I bring in Tony? Tony, good afternoon.
Hi, how are you doing?
Yeah, Tony, you're a delivery driver.
Yeah, I deliver into town, and this area that I'm talking about, Merrion Row, there's only two loading bays in it now. They've taken up about three loading bays in it, and they've taken up two lanes of traffic. There's only one lane goes through Merrion Row now. There used to be three. You could actually park on the right-hand side of the road. You don't know who's there. It's all restaurants. You have Bang. You had Unicorn. And it's just impossible. You have to go around the block 3 or 4 times to get a loading bay.
So there is one loading bay left, is there? But as you say,
there's often occupied. There's one each side of the road now. The other problem then is get civilian cars parked in them. You know, they aren't supposed to be there. And I have never seen a car clamped in a loading bay. I've seen vans clamped in there from being there too long, but I've never seen a car clamped. Now, Fitzwilliam, sorry, just to get away from Merrion, Fitzwilliam Street, that's pedestrianised now from 11 o'clock. Pubs don't open till 10:30. So it's a rush to get two or three places, the Colt and a few other places there in Fitzwilliam Street.
Oh, you mean South William Street, you mean?
South William Street, yeah, South William Street. Exchequer Street, they've taken away loading bays there outside the old stand.
So there's deep chairs there.
If they left them as loading bays until 11 o'clock or 11:30 and then put their chairs and tables out. But they don't.
So this is making your life very difficult, obviously.
Oh, very, very difficult, yeah. And the bigger guys, I'm involved, the guys, the trucks, the Guinness, the Heineken, you know, it's a nightmare for them.
Yeah, Gina, are you not finding that, you know, the your business is there along Merrion Road that obviously needs the Guinness's truck and the delivery trucks. I mean, is that not coming up as a problem?
We never had an official loading bay before. What they allowed us to do previous was that the deliveries could park on the double yellow lines between 10 and 12. So we never had parking, we never had loading bays. And so that's what was allowed. what they've done now is give us two designated loading bays, and they did put one on either side of the road so that the bigger trucks could pull up to deliver the kegs. So there is one by O'Donoghue's and there is one by Foley's, and also Spar, because they get their deliveries on pallets. So while we accept that it's probably less than what was there before, they're now all-day loading zones, which we never had before.
Tony?
Yeah. Oh, no, it is all-day loading, but, I mean, after a certain time a pub doesn't want your delivery. They don't want to go near them after half 11, 12 o'clock of the day, especially the city centre. It's totally different outside. And, like, the pedestrianised South William Street, you have to be out of there before 11. The top of Grafton Street, that's another problem. The lady selling the flowers now has no objection to them, but they start blocking the streets. They're supposed to, you know, those streets are supposed to be free until 11. So you can drive into them, you can't drive out. You have to reverse out the likes of South Down Street. It's a disaster. I don't know who designs these things. I, who has in mind, but they should actually get a truck driver or to sit down with them and talk about town.
Yeah. There's going to be more and more of these discussions. Let me bring in, I want to bring in Dave. Dave, good afternoon.
How are you, Katie? Not bad.
You're a taxi driver, Dave.
I'm a taxi driver over 20 years, and what they're doing is they're trying to bring in this outdoor dining. We don't get the weather for outdoor dining. The whole street situation, what they're doing is illegal by law. But unfortunately, you won't get people to stand up and bring them to court the way they did in Sandymount to bring them about the cycle lane. Do you understand?
Sorry, you're not suggesting that the businesses are doing anything illegal, Dave. You're saying that the local authority should be going.
Yeah. They shouldn't be blocking off the roads. Baker Street, it's a nightmare now at the moment because the lights are only allowing one or two cars out just outside, just past the Shelbourne Hotel. So when the schools are back next week, it'll be a disaster. Okay, Cable Street's going to be given back to the motorists, which is good. And Parliament Street. But what they're doing, I can't mention places now.
No, we'll
yeah, but
just keep it the streets,
I can't mention there. Can I mention the streets, yeah?
Yes, just mention streets.
Yeah, well, Sandymount has gone a disaster. Black Rock is a disaster. Dorky's a disaster. And Dunearley was always a disaster.
And a disaster to drive around, you're saying, Dave?
A disaster to drive around. If we get elderly people in the car and they can't walk or whatever to their destination, they're not able to walk through illness or whatever, I have to drop those people out. It's getting crazy. We're paying road tax. That's what we're paying. We pay an awful lot of money, insurance and road tax. And the streets are being narrowed and narrowed and narrowed, and it's not on.
Is that a combination though of not just the outdoor dining spaces but the cycle lanes that were brought in as well?
During the COVID, the certain two individuals that are responsible for all this, right? I won't mention their names. You know who they are, and they're causing havoc in the city. One of them ruined Dunearley. I used to walk in Dunearley. He ruined Dunearley, and he's trying to do the same with Dublin. I'm just frustrated because I'm on the road 24/7 and I see what's going on. And unfortunately, the motorists don't stand up in this country, not like the French. You have to admire the French. Hello?
Yes, indeed, Dave. I just want to go back to that point you made because I do remember there was an issue about the legality or otherwise of serving alcohol outside of a licensed premises that needed to be sorted out. Gina, what happened with that? How was that dealt with at the time?
Well, I know that what we did was just contact our Garda stations and, you know, discuss with the Garda what we were doing. And, you know, it's a kind of an agreement, I suppose, that they will allow it to happen while we're operating within the guidelines. And I think that was a kind of a mutual thing. Yeah. That
might become an issue down the line, though, mightn't it? Because if I recall properly, it was that you were only technically licensed to serve alcohol and sell alcohol within the footprint of the licensed premises itself, not outside.
Look, I think everything that was done, Katie, was to get businesses back up and running. And there were things that were brought in that obviously take a much longer time to bring in through legislation or through law. So I mean, I have no issue if we have to go and get our licensing areas extended. That's not a problem. It's just that's down to the dates in the licensing courts.
Okay.
So I don't think there'd be any issue. I have to say, Katie, like, I understand that some things have been disrupted for people, but we have also been phenomenally disrupted. We've had our businesses shut for nearly 18
there's
months.
There's no doubt about that.
People,
yep.
This is getting people back to work. And yes, it is changing the city. But I truly believe it's changing the city for the better. And everybody that comes and dines outside or has their cup of coffee as they're strolling through the city, they're all loving it. So, I mean, you know, you have to look at some things and say this is a good thing.
Gina, will you hang on there a moment? And Tom, mm-hmm. Tom, stay with us if you can. I need to take a break, but we'll come back after this. 51551.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And I want to go to John Martin now. John, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Katie. Thank you for taking my call.
You're down there in Limerick.
That's correct, yes.
And you were listening to our discussion about the pedestrianisation of the streets and the terrace cafes and all
yes.
that.
Yes, yes, indeed, yeah.
Where'd you stand in it?
I just honestly feel like I have really no problem with the street furniture, provided it's not causing an obstruction or it doesn't have a knock-on effect. My reasoning on this is, or my belief is, that Section 254 of the Planning Act has been set aside. Now, if a restaurant or a publican or whatever hotel requires a license, all they need to do is apply to the local authority and they will be given a license. And the only comeback you have on this is to appeal the license to on board Planola at a pretty hefty expense. And my problem with it is in relation to people with buggies, people with wheelchairs. But in my particular case, it's a question of the parking being diverted into our cul-de-sac, and to such a degree that the residents have no place to park in one point. And also, if an emergency vehicle should be required and illegal parking is in place, okay, then we would be denied the access to an emergency vehicle if one should be required.
So are you, John, where you are down there in Limerick, you're obviously close to a street that has been turned over to, where parking spaces have been turned over to restaurants, is it?
Correct, yes.
And the people who would have parked there are now parking on your street?
Yes, correct. Absolutely, yes.
And have you complained about this? Or
On numerous occasions. I've complained to the Limerick City Council on numerous occasions. And but without any, how shall I put it to you, without any success.
And would your street normally have paid parking on it?
Yes, it is paid. It is paid parking, I agree, yes.
But you would have permit parking for the residents normally?
Permit parking for the residents, and strictly speaking, it's clearly marked with yellow lines and signs and everything like that. And but they don't seem to be effective. I have requested Limerick City Council from time to time to have a look at this and revisit the whole situation, but unfortunately, I've had no luck with this.
And as you say,
I'm not alone in this. A number of my neighbours feel exactly the same way.
And when you mentioned there Section 254 of the Planning Act, that's what would allow you to appeal.
Well, you see, initially Section 254 quite clearly stated that if a person needed to put out street furniture, they would have had to apply under the Planning Act of Section 254. But to the best of my knowledge, that has Section 254 for this purpose has been set aside. So all a person has to do is apply to the local authority for a license to put out street furniture. That license invariably is granted. And if then people want to do something about it, then they have to appeal to on board panel.
I see. Yeah. So normally there would be a different. You could appeal at first instance in the past,
oh, indeed,
but as you
yeah.
say, because of the and because let's say it again, and Gina made the point there, because of the very very difficult circumstances that the hospitality industry found themselves in. There was special measures put in place to facilitate this outdoor dining because that was all that we were allowed to do for up until very recently. Would you have sympathy in, for
Katie,
the businesses in your area, John?
Katie, I would have the utmost sympathy for restaurants, for the hospitality industry, and because it's creating great employment and generating great revenue. But there are situations where you cannot take a blanket approach to the hospitality industry in relation to, i.e., illegal parking, indiscriminate parking, and so on and so forth. And also where there might be, you see, an impaired person, okay, impaired sight, or a person with a disability would find it very difficult in some instances to get by footpaths and areas like that. But having you ask the question, do I have sympathy? Of course I do, and I like to see all these people thrive and do very well because our economy has to get back on its feet.
Yeah, and Gina, that is an issue. I know you said that you were lucky in that you were able to do footpath build-outs, pavement build-outs, mm-hmm. and you were able to retain much of the footpath that was there to begin with and on Merrion Row. There are, I mean, and I have come across it and seen it many places, and I have thought to myself, I would not like to be visually impaired trying to make my way down certain footpaths and streets where these outdoor cafes have now been set up.
Yeah. Again, I can't really comment on other places, but I do know with us on Merrion Row, we have quite a number of blind or visually impaired people who use our streets constantly. They work in the area. So we actually sat down and spoke with them before we did anything, to ask what they need us to do, to ask where they need us to put the furniture. So they were involved in our process long before the footpath build-outs were even built. So I'm very, very conscious of that because we do have quite a few users. We've got some beautiful guide dogs who are really part and parcel of our streets. So we really did bring them into the consultation process with us.
Tom, you'll appreciate there that, like, listening to Gina, they did everything they could to facilitate, the various users of that street as best they can.
Oh, absolutely. That's not the issue. The fact of the matter is that I know you were under pressure during the lockdown, but what I'm saying is it should go back to normal when everything else, when the lockdown is over and everything else goes back to normal. We go out of the way to help you now insofar as we can and put up with the inconvenience. But you want, they want us to put up with it indefinitely when everything is back to normal.
Can I bring in, is it Marie Rogers?
Mary.
Mary, you were listening to Tom there.
Yeah, and I was listening to Gina and I thought she was so in her whole...
I didn't quite catch that, Mary. Do you want to be sure you're speaking directly into the phone?
I just thought she was so reasonable in her whole outlook and seems to have done everything right. I fully accept that there are probably situations which are not good. As in everything in life, you're going to things that don't work out in certain areas or whatever. But I have two points to make. One, I think the hospitality industry has been hit too badly. And I really feel sorry for them, and I think they've played a blinder in this. In most cases, I'm sure there's areas where it doesn't work. But in general, I think it's a huge plus, and I hope we go back to that. I come from a square.
Mary, can you hear me?
The streets, you can hear me.
Yeah, are you on a speakerphone by any chance, Mary? Hello? Okay, so we were going to just try and sort out Mary's line there. But just going back to John.
Yes.
You know, you heard there from Gina again, like they went to great lengths to ensure that people with visual impairment were not discommoded, were involved in the design of that street. around Limerick, what has Limerick been transformed in the way that, that many parts of Dublin have been transformed?
Oh, most certainly. Oh, absolutely, without a shadow of a doubt.
And in a good way, you're saying, John, are you?
Well, to a certain degree, and it has been a good way. And it's as I say, I would like to see, I've got the greatest sympathy for the hospitality industry, for the employment it gives, for the revenue it returns to the country. But nevertheless, okay, and I did hear Gina say that there was a consultation process that went on. It has not come to my attention in relation to certain hospitalities in Limerick where a consultation program has been adhered to.
I think we got Mari back now. Thanks for that.
I just felt listening to the first guy, Tom, I think it was. And
Tom,
he's not here by his own admission most of the year. And I don't know when I get them playing again. I wasn't a great traveller. But one of the things I loved about being abroad was the whole street experience. And now I've experienced here, and I don't know when I'll go again. So I think for most of us, and I'm retired, I'm not a young one, I love sitting out. And I love the whole atmosphere of it. And I was in Dublin yesterday, and I thought it was so well handled. I wasn't blocked anywhere. There was street. I could walk. I was in the centre. And when I collected my husband from his medical appointment, we went to Ranelagh and we sat outside an establishment and it wasn't blocking the street. And at one stage I went into the toilet and, you know, there was so many tables inside and the noise and the thing. And I said, oh God, I can't bear to go back to that again. It's so lovely sitting outside. And for those of us who don't get abroad, it makes me nostalgic. It makes me feel I've a taste of abroad on a fine day. I think people are better humoured. You start talking to people beside you. And it's just a lovely, lovely atmosphere. And I fully admit that there's probably places that aren't run right. But I know I've gone into Kilkee. I've done many times early in the morning. And the street is totally clean. There isn't a thing on the street. As far as I know, they clean up themselves after themselves. And as I say, I haven't been in at night, so I don't know what it's like at night. I go in for a cup of coffee, sit out. And I love it. And I just think, let's not throw out the baby with the bathwater. Like, okay, there's probably things that need to be ironed out. But this thing of like, oh, we must go back to the way we were. I hope we never go back to the way we are.
Yeah, let me bring Tom back into that, Mary. Because I think a lot of people will be coming at it from your position. And that, you know, loving this idea that we can in Ireland now have a touch of that kind of holiday feel.
Yeah, yeah.
Tom, exactly. would you not concede that there's something lovely about being able to sit out?
Well, there was. Yesterday was an Estepona day. Yeah, try sitting out in the middle of January. That's what I say to you.
But
then
you know, if you,
to,
but no, but I mean, I mean, if you go to Paris in the middle of January, you will sit out.
You do sit out,
and you know, you might have a blanket, so you might have an awning over you. But people sit out in cities in Northern Europe all through the winter.
I see where you're coming from. Look, there are no rights or wrongs in social and domestic situations; only differences of opinion. But if you're living in Dublin and you have to put up with it, I can tell you it's different. That's all I can say. I can only.
But you're talking about one particular area. Like at 90% in Ranelagh yesterday, to my knowledge, and now I don't know Ranelagh very well, it doesn't look like a street that has many residents. It's very much a commercial street. There's a lot of eating places on it. There was a lovely buzz yesterday. You don't park in the middle of Dublin. There's no parking in the middle of Dublin. So it's not impacting on people parking. So in a lot of cases, it isn't impacting. So, okay, you might have to jig it around, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know,
I can tell you a few places in Haddington Road for parking. But I'm not there at the moment to point
out
the
exact... But do you not think we've become a people that need to be able to park? And I'm not talking... I totally accept there are people who need to get near that are visually impaired or, you know, whatever... And,
I'm talking about the people who live in Dublin. But
90% of us have this expectation that right outside the door of everything. We do it everywhere. It wouldn't do us any harm like to walk a bit and park somewhere else and walk down. We parked way out of Ranelagh and we walked back in. Didn't do us a bit of harm. Okay, it was a fine evening. But I don't think it'll be a problem in winter because, as you say, an awful lot of people won't choose to. It'll be totally cut back anyway, I'd imagine. But I'd like to think that it would happen every summer, maybe from Easter onwards till October.
Well, of course, you're entitled to your views. You're entitled to your vote. You're entitled to your views. I'm just giving my view.
And, Tom, can I ask you, have you ever sat out in any of those very many
I spent 2 weeks in Connemara recently. I spent some time in Dalkey. I went into the clubhouse in Dalkey. They had their own car park, but I was freezing, so I didn't stay there very long.
But and do you accept that it's a nice experience to be able to?
I certainly don't. No, absolutely not.
You don't.
See, that's your opinion, but for a lot of us, I find
it
healthier.
It is my opinion. Yeah, yeah.
Much healthier even eating outside. The fresh air, the whole, not the big loud in any place. No matter how civilized people are, there's a noise level inside that you don't get outside.
Well, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
And you don't get this music in the background blaring in your ears. I'm slightly deaf. I love being outside. I love the whole air.
Listen to the taxi driver? He can't get through the city. The truck drivers can't pull up. You know, the streets, as I say, they weren't.
Well, I say, God bless them. They've no difficulty in Dublin because from what I saw yesterday, and I haven't been up for a good while.
Where do you live? I live in West Clare. There's some difference in West Clare and Dublin.
No, but I'm saying that what made me sad yesterday in Dublin was how quiet it was. So I don't think that there was no issue with traffic moving because it was the bit that was in there was moving. The only life I saw was in the pavements, and I think if there hadn't been some people sitting in the pavements, it would have been quite a sad city. And any shop I went into, I actually felt sorry for people. I think they're struggling. And I think that anything that adds to their business is to be appreciated.
Gina, can I ask you, how is business?
We're nowhere near what we used to be doing. And like that, we are still at 50% inside in the restaurant just because of social distancing. And outside is weather dependent. But in the good weather, it is fabulous. There's no doubt about it. The realities are that we have a huge staffing crisis in the industry. So that is restricting a lot of businesses with regards to their opening times and their opening hours, because we just don't have the staff to do our normal trading times. But everybody is so appreciative of what we are doing and the fact that they can get back out again. But if I could just say one thing, Casey, just going back to Marion Row and what we're doing, and it's not just about outdoor dining, it is about bringing a different way of living to the city. And one of the collaborations that we've entered into is with the Royal Irish Academy of Music. And they have put together a program of two musicians, 2 hours a day, 3 days a week, 45 weeks of the year, ready to roll whenever, if we get full pedestrianisation, that we would have opera, jazz and classical music on the street. And the RHA have said that they would do plein air art classes. So this isn't just about outdoor dining. This is about creating living cities where people get to use their city and not just from sitting inside their cars.
Tom, are you an opera fan?
Yes, music, yes.
Surely you couldn't argue against that.
I wouldn't like to see the whole of them turned into a carnival. So that's my views on it.
But
you're changing Dublin. Usually if you change something, do you do it for the right reasons? Or what reason do you do it for?
But I don't know how what we're trying to do is a wrong reason. What we're trying to do is bring people back in to enjoy their city again. Our street, and it really never dawned on me until the street was empty. You know, in last summer, in the middle of lockdown, there wasn't a sinner. It was like the apocalypse. And it just dawned on me how beautiful the city centre was, and our particular area, without traffic. Now, we have 7 protected structures on our little street of 110 yards. So there's very few other places that can boast that. We've got the Huguenot Cemetery. We've got lovely protected structures. And with that, everybody comes to the galleries and to the museums. And why not build something else? And not even build. Why not create something that people can enjoy? You know, if you're sitting in a car, so what? It's an extra 30 seconds to go around another street. But this is something that's really, really worthwhile, and I truly believe it.
Okay.
And I can tell you, yesterday in Dublin, if it wasn't for the life of people sitting on the edge of the street, I think it would have been a very sad place. Suppose it was from people sitting out in the sun.
Okay, we're getting more calls into this. Tom, will you hold that thought? We'll come back to this, but we'll take this break.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And I want to bring in Marion now. Marion, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Katie. Very same problems happening here in Galway.
And you're calling it a problem.
From Gorey, all they closed some of the streets without telling the people in business on the street. I have a friend that has a pet grooming business. They closed her street without even telling her.
And
it's just and only for a lovely Lord Mayor lady we have. She got it open so many hours a day because the people couldn't continue their businesses. And when you're walking the streets, sometimes you have to step out on the road. I notice people with a disabled parking, they go in before 12 in the morning and there's trucks parked in the disabled places because I feel sorry for the taxi people and the people trying to deliver. It's impossible. And as you know, the streets of Galway are very narrow.
Yeah, I was thinking that actually, that Galway would have had particular issues, down in the centre of the city there.
Yeah, I mean, I've travelled, I know Dorky well, I know Dunleary well, and I think it's a disgrace what they've done there, quite honestly.
And do you not, like, you were listening to Mary there talking about that lovely continental feel?
I know. Yeah, it does look nice, I have to admit. It does look nice, people sitting outside. But then, if you're slightly disabled and you're walking on a pavement, you have waitresses running in and out with food in front of you. And you have to, it's not easy.
I do think that...
You're afraid of getting coffee or a tray of food all over you because they're running in and out in a hurry.
I do, yeah. Well, you'd have to feel for the waitresses and the waiters as
who
are trying to negotiate.
I feel for the people that get burnt when a coffee is spilt over them too,
You live in Galway yourself, Marion.
Yes, I do, yes.
And what is the word there in terms of, is this going to be carried on into the winter or have you heard anything in that line?
I haven't heard what's happening, no.
I've got, you mentioned but, there, yeah, go on.
I mean, it's the same around Salt Hill and all the other places as well, not just in the centre of the city.
I want to bring in Peter, because you mentioned, Marion, people who might have some kind of level of disability and trying to negotiate the situation. Peter Gorey, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Katie. How are you?
You live in Batchelors Walk.
I do indeed, in the centre of Dublin.
And you have an issue.
Yeah, I mean, I just have short commutes across to the other side of the city to a certain licensed premises where I drop into occasionally. And, from time to time, the entire path is blocked. That is an issue. I'm in favour of the whole outdoor gig and the whole changes that are happening. However, there needs to be a sense of balance and a bit more... responsibility taken around the whole thing.
You use a cane though, a white cane, do you?
I do. I have a very small amount of central vision, so it's like a very small circle. But I do need a cane really for communication purposes to notify people that there's an issue and sometimes just to navigate as well. So, I do use one, yeah.
Yeah, because I was very impressed with Gina Murphy there saying that they had actually sat down with people who had visual impairment and who were blind to ensure that they got the design right of the Merrion Row outdoor dining area. You're saying that it hasn't been gotten right everywhere?
Not everywhere. I mean, I have a few set routes around town and I won't name any places or whatever, but there's times... where the streets, there's tables and chairs on both sides of the path, and occasionally, you know, they pull chairs or tables together, or there's people there, and all of a sudden the entire path is gone, you know, and you're forced out onto the road. Or, you know, I just prod my white cane and just say, can I get through there, whatever, and it's not a big deal. It's a nuisance, but, you know, I'm guessing it's harder, as I say, for those in wheelchairs.
Or even if you're pushing a buggy, I'd imagine it must be very tricky in some parts, particularly those wide double buggies that a lot of parents, you see a lot of parents pushing around the city centre now.
Yeah, when I come opposite a buggy person, you know, that can be an issue there. We're both competing for the
same narrow
amount of path space that's left, you know. So, as I say, in favour, but there needs to be, you know, the Mariano approach there, the Gina approach. There needs to be a bit more consultation and thought gone into it.
Okay. Thanks for that, Peter. 8050 715 815.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And we'll move on. And we will, in fact, go back to a story that we covered yesterday in relation to dogs and horses sharing a beach, Old Bawn Beach in Wexford in this case. Paul, good afternoon to you.
How are you?
Yeah, but we spoke to Litka yesterday, who had a terrifying story, actually, of galloping on the beach, hacking, as she was saying, on the beach of Old Bawn in Wexford, and her horse being attacked by a dog, and it could have gone horribly wrong. You had a similar experience.
I did, yeah, I did. It's going back to probably about 8 months ago now, and I was on a horse that would have been a little bit spooky. He would have been easily to be frightened a little bit. But we were on the gallop. We weren't on the beach. So we were up off the beach.
And this is Old Bawn Beach again?
This is Old Bawn Beach. Yeah, there's actually a horse gallop there as well. It runs parallel with the beach.
Right.
So we were on that. When you come in on it, you come in through the car park and you're very up along onto the sand dunes and you come out onto the gallop. But it's about probably half mile of a straight. Then there's a little bit of a kink and it goes on the same again. But I came on to it and I walked up along on the horse. In the distance, I could see a man. Oh, he was probably 200-300 metres away and I could clearly see him. But I kept walking on along. But when I got closer to him...
You say walking, you were on your horse. Your horse
just
walking.
On the horse. Yeah. Just sitting on the horse walking along. Yeah. Just take it nice and easy. But to make a long story short, when I got up fairly close to him, I didn't see the dogs. But there's high wiggy grass on both sides of the gallop. So it's about 2-3 metres wide. It's pretty narrow. But all of a sudden, one of the dogs charged the horse through the wiggy grass. And in an instant, my horse spun, jumped up over the bank beside me and took off in a gallop. Which there was a drain about 4 or 5 metres in front of me and I knew it was there. But from previous times I've been on the beach, I knew there was a gripe there. But it was partly covered with grass. But anyhow, the horse's feet went down into it. And he went down on his front and I went out over his head. So I hit the ground and when I kind of got at myself a bit, when I looked, the horse was gone. And when I looked again, I could see him galloping away in the distance.
And so, were you injured? What state were you in?
I was on my hands and knees trying to get up at this stage, but I knew my shoulder was hurted. But I knew I hadn't broken my collarbone or anything. I knew I had done something. But anyhow, I looked to see where the horse was, and he was gone. I'm not taking much notice of the man or the dogs at this stage. And I sort of got myself a little bit. And I checked my shoulder, and it was paining me. But I knew it wasn't bad.
Right.
So I took out the phone and I rang a person that I knew up the road because I knew the horse was gone and I knew he'd probably gallop up the road. And in the meantime, this man is somewhere around now. He hasn't come over to me. He hasn't spoken to me. He has said nothing to me at all. Nothing.
And just to be clear, the dog, what kind of a dog was it?
It was a tallish stump of a running type of dog, but there was two of them.
Right.
And I think I've met this man on the beach before. I think I may, going back about 8 or 10 months beforehand. I was on another horse and I met him on another part of the sand dunes. And we had a little confrontation. The dogs went at another horse I had, but he stood his ground.
And the dogs aren't on a lead, no?
No, they're absolutely not on a lead. Nor was he going to put them on a lead.
Right.
Now, they had a go at that original horse, but he stood his ground. And I had words to him. I said, look, I said, you're going to cause bother. I said, someone's going to get hurt if you leave your dogs like that. Hence, as it turned out, I'm 99.9% sure this was the same man again with the same pair of dogs.
Right.
They're fairly distinctive dogs. And you'd know when you saw the confrontation a little bit, you would know when you see them again.
Okay, so you are now, after picking yourself up, dusting yourself down,
yeah,
you've made a call to your friend to look out for your horse.
Yes, I knew he was gone to the road, which in turn he just couldn't help, but he rang a neighbour, but they came down. So it took me, I'm 15 minutes away from the road because I'm way down the gallop.
Mm-hmm.
So I made my way back up along to the road, and a woman had actually caught the horse. And there was a cyclist there as well. And she was just saying, she said, we were getting worried. She said that we couldn't see any rider. And I explained, well, I said, look, I'm after having a bit of a thing. I said, with dogs down the track, I said, enough, you're getting thrown off the horse. But that man never asked me, was I okay? Remotely, I can like it. He walked off with his two dogs, the very same as if nothing had happened. And he absolutely seen me. No point in thinking he hadn't seen me. He seen the horse bold, and he would have seen the horse go down. And he seen me go down with him and the horse take off.
And he never asked you if you were all right? Or
Never spoke to me. As I walked back up the track, holding my arm as it would have been, to be honest, about, I don't know, maybe 50 metres away from where it happened, he was kind of over to my right-hand side, and I looked over, and I said a few choice words to him, and I kept going, and that was it. And so I'm not really against dogs on the beach with people. I think it's great. I just think when there's a horse about, I think it might be a good idea to put a dog on a lead, at least for them few minutes. If they want to let them go, let a horse go by. You don't know what you're dealing with as regards horses as such and so on. So it's just of in that instance, but this could have got worse.
I was Paul, was it badly injured afterwards? Did you have to look after it, the shoulder?
No, the horse itself was okay. But the thing about this was, only that woman, she was in the house and heard the horse running up and down the road. Had she not caught the horse and he galloped on up that road and around the next bend, there may have been a car coming down. He was running blind, so he was well up for running. And he could have run into a car or whatever.
Yeah, it could have been.
This could have been a lot worse. Now, I gave myself a shake off and I had a sore shoulder for a couple of weeks or 3 weeks afterwards and I'd get over. But that could have been a lot worse. All he needed to have done, and I think I would have met this man before, all he needed to do was call up his dogs for 2 seconds, 2 minutes, just let the horse go by. People down there at the minute, you can sometimes, when you have a nervy horse, maybe you just put up your hand and you say to someone, look, he's nervous, could you come on? And they will oblige, and very much so. And it's not all people are kind of that way. But this man in particular, I think, was like, well, I'm going to do what I like. And if you own your horse, that's the way I see it, or the way I see it anyhow.
Yeah, and Litka did say yesterday that when she was speaking to people on the beach after her incident last week, that she heard that it wasn't the first time that there had been an incident with dogs on that beach. And maybe your story might be one of those stories that people have heard down there.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah,
it's big enough for everybody. And to be honest, on both my occasions, I actually wasn't on the beach. There's sand dunes, you have a beach and then you have sand dunes. And you come up from the beach and then you have there's a horse gallop. And you're kind of staying in there to stay off the beach, especially because you know there's going to be dogs down there. But to be honest, most of the time with most of the people, when they do see you coming on a horse, they will. They will put a lead on the dog or whatever, at least until you go by, and that's fair enough. But it's just in this particular case, and when you don't control your dogs, this could have been a lot worse.
Yeah, I mean, the point is well made that this is not just about dog owners and it's not just about horse owners. It's a loose horse is a dangerous thing. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Now the horse himself could have broke a leg, and he most certainly would have been put down. There's no doubt about that. But he run completely blind. The dog charged the horse, but the dog would have heard the horse come up.
Yeah.
The horse wouldn't have seen him, and that's just how it happened. So, but the man himself would have seen the horse and rider coming, and you wouldn't have seen him coming for a good 100 metres before he got.
Yeah, you'd have to say that that was very careless, especially if you're right and if it's the same man that you had words with previously.
I'd be very, 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 very sure of it. Very sure of it.
Okay, Paul, thank you for that.
Good
to get that out there that, you know, this is an issue, as I said, not just for dog owners and horse owners, but for everyone who's on in the vicinity. It could have been very, very serious indeed. I've got to bring in Linda. Linda, good afternoon.
Hi, Katie. How are you?
Yeah, you're talking about dogs and being on or off leads.
Yeah, and you know, I'm really just struck from your last caller there and all of the calls yesterday that every incident that people are describing, whether it's the difficulties for horse riders, for horses, for other dog owners, every single one of them could be avoided if dogs were under control. And 99% of dogs are not when they're, like, they're animals. If they get a strong attraction, you know, whether it's squirrels, whether it's horses or whatever, the best trained dog is going to naturally respond and naturally go for them. So they absolutely should be leashed. They can be long leashed, they can still get exercise. But I could tell you, I have a dog, I walk her every day, and I could almost about fail. I could tell you an incident that has happened daily that has caused either anxiety or stress or some level of aggression on a daily basis unleashed dogs.
Oh, from other dogs, that your dog has gotten stressed from other dogs who were off leash.
Not even me. Like other things that I've seen. And it works two ways. I was on Dunleary Pier yesterday evening, and there was a young woman walking a small little toy dog, only a couple of pounds, and it wasn't on a lead. And I'm looking at her and kind of saying, if any dog reacted to her dog would be in the dog's mouth and severely damaged. And so I'm not even looking at my dog in that incident at all. I'm just thinking, has she any awareness of how vulnerable her dog is? And the only way she could step in was put her hands in.
I wonder, Linda, because we've seen this explosion in dog ownership over the last year, since COVID came amongst us. Are there a lot of inexperienced dog owners out there that maybe are not really, familiar or aware of how this can be? You can be seconds away from disaster here.
Without a shadow of a doubt. And I'm not saying, I'm absolutely expecting that most of the incidences I've seen have happened at the hands of unaware, I won't say ignorant in the positive sense, that they don't understand what could happen. Another incident the day before yesterday in the park, it was two men walking two loose dogs, an older woman minding her own business walking her dog, and the two loose dogs ran at her dog. And her arm is yanked, and it's like your caller just a minute ago coming off the horse shore, sore shoulder. Who's to say that this woman didn't come away from this incident both stressed and in pain? And if you were to talk to those two lads, there's not a doubt in my mind that they weren't choosing to inflict any pain on the woman. But you can say you need to understand how dogs behave. You need to understand how leashed and unleashed dogs behave. And you need to understand that your own dog, that might be as friendly as anything, no more than humans, it can have an adverse reaction to any other dog. And you need to understand the breed that you have. So, ignorance is not a defence. You absolutely need to educate yourself about dog behaviour, about your breed and how they behave and what they need from you.
I think a lot of people might have been struck with that story that we had on the programme yesterday, where that tiny little puppy that our caller had was attacked by another woman's dog in an outdoor pavement cafe. And the owner of that other dog said that the dog was 12 years old and had never, ever reacted like that before in 12 years. And yet was still capable of savaging, really, as it was described to us, that puppy.
And it shows the unpredictable nature. They are animals and you need to be training them, like low level training, but some level of training every single day. You need to be reinforcing it every single day. And there's loads of resources out there, on the website, there's loads of establishments, certainly around Dublin. There's all the rescue centres, all have loads of information about what you need to do to manage a dog, to control a dog, to have a happy, healthy dog, and to make sure that you're not causing unnecessary stress or damage or danger to you, your dog, other people, and even the likes of the horse riders and everything. And every single one of the incidences you've spoken about today and yesterday, if dogs had been leashed, it would have been avoided. Every single one of them.
Yeah, absolutely. Linda, many thanks for that. We have to take a break. 51551.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And going back now to that issue of outdoor dining and whether or not the pedestrianisation of whole swathes of our towns and our cities is a good thing. Larry O'Hara, good afternoon.
Hello, Katie.
Yeah, you're down there, lovely Cork.
Yeah, that's right. Outside Mitchelstown and between Fermoy and Mitchelstown. A village called Kilworth. It's on the... off the old N8 long
Yes,
ago.
Indeed, yeah. I know it, I know
yeah,
it.
Yeah, you should know it, yeah.
And where do you stand on this one?
Oh, my God. I've listened to that for the Tom there, and I'd like to be polite to him, but what I'd advise him to do is put on a new three-piece suit and tell him go away on a holiday for himself.
Why is that, Larry?
Look, isn't it a grand sight to see... poor old publicans, I have no one like belong to me in the pub business or no relations of any sort, but look, they were locked up, and when they got the chance that they could serve people, the only place they could serve them was outside. And isn't it grand to see the bit of colour on the streets, the bit of fun, the bit of atmosphere, the bit of joy in people enjoying themselves and not causing any trouble? How could any man or any woman condemn that?
Well, we've had a few people who have issues with that, Larry.
You have, Katie. Cross-owners and cribbers.
Indeed.
Okay. And begrudgers, that's what I call them.
Stay there, Larry. Betty Collard, good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you, Katie.
Are
Thanks
you a cross-owner or a begrudger?
No, I'm not a begrudger, but I'll just explain my situation. I work, I'm a civil servant, I work actually down in Kildare Street. And I would be near where Marion Row is. I would walk around the block. I would walk there. And I was sitting on the bench waiting a bus one day along there, which is full of pollution. And it's a one-way, just a one traffic system now. And yeah. All the pollution that's coming out of there onto people's tables. I just think food, I've seen food going flying, where they come out of restaurants with their tray, and the next thing it's gone, someone on their phone is walking along the street, and the next thing is the food is gone on the footpath. But my biggest crib is that the footpaths are taken over now by all this, and the pedestrians are not taken into account at all, and in particular wheelchair users.
But Betty, is it not the case that as Gina was explaining to us, that the footpath has been left alone there on Marion Road?
Yeah, but you see, the problem is, that we'll say Hugo's, for instance, on Marion Row, right? You have the door here, you have the footpath here, and then you have your outdoor dining. So whoever is coming out of the restaurant has to cross to where the outdoor dining is. And there's pedestrians walking along that street.
Oh, I get you, yeah. So that's where that's how it happened with the plate of food where they went flying.
Absolutely. But I just think that there's so much pollution coming out of cars and going on that outdoor dining that the traffic is all chock-a-blocked up there now because it's down to one lane, right? I just think, I'm not a begrudger, but I just think the whole system looks very, very ugly looking. And not at that, I mean, if I'm getting the bus in Dane Street into work or home, Suffolk Street is another place where you have uneven footpaths. You have, a while ago, I was coming along there, just minding my own business, walking along. This girl bounces out with a tray of stuff, and the tray of stuff went flying. You know? And the other thing is that if people are short-sighted or blind or whatever, and I've seen a lot of blind people on Grafton Street, that McDonald's now have outdoor dining, right? So you go up in the morning at 7:30, and they have their outdoor dining, and you have all these vans that are cleaning windows, delivering stuff, and you have to come out in the middle of the road with another van coming up, and people on these electric bikes are coming along footpaths now. So I think our footpaths have been totally eroded. Now, for me now, I wouldn't like outdoor dining. You know what really, really gets me is these pubs that have outdoor, we say, out the back. And they've all this perspex put up, and this is gap left, and that's supposed to be open air. That's not open air. I mean, I am not going to name a place that I was in recently, and I'd say there was about 40 people in it, and now they don't sell food, you can order food from outside and bring it in. Well, the place was full of people, right? And who knows who has coronavirus, who knows what they have. You're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. But I just think our streets now in Dublin are taken over, and it looks very ugly looking.
Okay, Betty, we're going to have to leave it on that thought. Many thanks for sharing that view with us. But that's all we have time for today, and indeed for this week. Today's programme was produced by Fergus Sweeney. Research was by Richie Byrne. Sound was by Liam Mullen. Our BCO today was Daniel Keating, and the series producer is Rebecca Meehan. Stand by, because Ray Darcy is up next.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with a Kia EV6. Inspire your senses. The fully electric EV6. For more, visit kia.com.
1850 715 815. Stays open until 3:15 p.m. or email joe@rte.ie.